Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, QT and Sign Guy back with you here on another Sunday afternoon. Gray and dreary as it is here in the Northwest. Real quick before we jump into things, some show notes. If you are looking for some wrestling, today you have KDW happening in Memphis, Indiana. You have PNPW in Astoria, Oregon. And you have UWA Blue Collar Wrestling like usual at the North Portland Eagles. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest on. It is his first day with us. Dylan Gage, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are we, Sign Guy, QT?
Doing pretty well. Well, since today is your first time with us, we're going to give you the first-timer's question to lead things. What got you into the crazy business of professional wrestling?
A lot of folks don't realize this, but I'm actually second generation. And interestingly, I didn't know that until I was a bit older, because the man who fathered me was never really part of my life. But I found out later on down the road that he had a history in Mid-South and work in the Southern Territories back in the late 70s and 80s. So I'd always been intrigued by professional wrestling as a child. I was a huge fan. Had dreams of aspirations, but once I reached a bit of an age where I found out about, you know, my biological father and I started learning about his history, it was a no-brainer. I had to chase that dream.
And when you find out that your biological father had been a professional wrestler, did it make you more determined than you had been to get into the business and succeed, or were you already at that point determined that this was going to be what you did, and that just sort of solidified things?
It certainly solidified things for me. You know, I had thought about the professional wrestling business my entire life. As a teenager, I had tinkered with the professional wrestling business. I took my first bumps in my teenage years. And just for whatever reason, I never would make the leap. I never would say, yes, this is for me. And to be honest with you, in hindsight, I think I was scared. I think I didn't believe in myself. I thought that I was going to not be good at it. I thought I was going to fail. And because of that fear, I somehow talked myself out of trying for a long, long time.
Now, at what point in time did you decide that you were going to overcome that fear, get in the ring, and actually get full wrestling training and embark on this as a career?
Oh, man. So let me turn the clock. I guess that lands us in 2013, I suppose. I had really fallen in love with wrestling again, and now I was in my adult years. And, you know, I was going through some trauma, to be honest with you. I'm a veteran of the Iraq War. You know, and I have post-traumatic stress from time to time, and I battle some things, or as you might hear, sometimes you guys talk about battling demons, but I'm a bit different. And wrestling was a big part of what helped me ward those demons off for a long time, and I found a creative outlet with it. And I realized that it really was something I was passionate about, and I started sniffing around. I had taken those first bumps as a teenager, and for whatever reason, didn't stick with it. I found myself here in my adult life, and I decided, you know, I'm going to give this thing one more shot. So I start sniffing around, and, you know, it used to be a lot different getting into the business than it is now. Even that 5 years ago when I first started coming around the business, there were no ads in the yellow pages for wrestling training. And so you had to know someone, or you had to meet someone, or be introduced to someone. And I started sniffing around, made that happen, went down near Columbia, South Carolina, with a gentleman named Bob Keller, and I worked out with him and just had an absolutely great time. But the training atmosphere wasn't for me. I didn't click with the boys, and I continued looking. It wasn't really until I made it out there to the Northwest where you guys were, and I started finding a brotherhood and a group of guys that I could train with and I could better myself with and I could travel with. And that's when I really started falling in love with the business. Up until that point, I was kind of ankle deep. I wanted to do it, but I was scared.
Up here, when you were getting into the business, you got hooked up with SCW, where you were used as a referee. Mm-hmm. What was it about SCW that kind of drew you into there, where you got into the ring and sort of learned from being a referee?
You know, it was opportunity. It just so happened that we were reasonably new in the area up there. I was living near Polsbo, which is right beside Suquamish, and saw a flyer somewhere. I can't remember exactly where I saw it, but they were having a show out at the Suquamish Tribal Center. So, of course, we went to the show, loved the show, went around, shook a few hands, and that's when I met Ron Von Hess. Let me tell you, Ron, I understand he draws heat from a lot of guys, but that man has been good to me. He has been good to me in every facet of my life. He's been good to me in my personal and professional life, and for that I'm indebted to him, because he opened his heart, and he opened SCW, and he invited me in for those opportunities. And without his kindness of opening me up and bringing me in, show me the ropes through SCW, I'm not sitting here talking to you today.
Now, SCW, of course, here in Western Washington, has been around for quite some time. We've had a lot of great, great talent pass through there. And SCW happens to be a place where a lot of veterans will come. Who were some of the veteran wrestlers there that helped guide you initially as you were getting started with SCW?
Man, the first two that come to mind are Ian Bear and Paul Sabaris. Both of those guys reached out to me immediately and said, let's make sure that we're taking care of you and get you on the right path. And from there, it was overwhelming. You know, we had Triple D coming in. He's giving me advice. We had Randy the Pimp Taylor coming in, and he's wanting to give me advice. Not only that, but Ron was fantastic about bringing in folks to give us training opportunities. So I had the opportunity to get in the ring and train with the Tokyo Monster Cahagas. I've been in the ring training with Jeff Cobb, Casey Carlisle, you know, Bob Evans. So I had these great training opportunities. I was still just as green as you could possibly be in the business, and as far as I'm concerned, I still am. But that's how I was indoctrinated into this business, was through the complete immersion of some of the greatest minds, and Ron was bringing them right there to Bremerton.
You brought up a lot of great names there that help guide you and give you advice. Do you think that being at SCW at the time you did gave you a better foundation than if you had been in some other area of the country where maybe they don't bring in a lot of the name talents and they use primarily local guys?
Well, you know, it's interesting you would say that, because now where I am, working in the North Georgia scene, I do see that a lot. It's kind of quite the opposite, where it is a lot of local guys that are being used in most cases. And don't get me wrong, there's a ton that you can learn from those local guys. And they've been down a lot of roads. They've had a lot of experience and a lot of things that they can share and you can benefit from. But especially when you're young in the business, there is something mesmerizing about standing in the room, in a locker room, across the ring from someone who you watched on television. Or a big one for me was Kevin Sullivan. The first time that I had the opportunity to be in the same room with Kevin Sullivan, I was in awe to the point where he actually looked at me and was like, you got to cut it off, you know, just get over it. Because I was so starstruck, very, very green, but that made for a very unique training experience, and there was a lot of value in it for me to have him bring those guys in for us to work with.
Like you said, you're now in the North Georgia area applying your trade. Can you tell us a little bit about what led you to North Georgia and how does it differ from the Pacific Northwest as far as the independent wrestling scene?
So, absolutely, I'd be happy to. North Georgia, I'm a native of the upstate of South Carolina. That's where I'm originally from, and that's where I'm living now. So that's, I guess you could say, home for me. When I left Seattle, we were having a family emergency, and I had to get back here to my family as quickly as possible, and I actually ended up taking off when we made that transition. But I end up here in Georgia and North Carolina working, North Carolina and South Carolina working that area. How is it different? Let me count the ways. I would, but I can't count that high. To be perfectly honest, when I got here, I took that time off, and then I really started finding a way to get linked up with the scene here, and I didn't like what I found at first. The boys treat each other a lot differently. It's a lot bigger of a ribbing culture than I ever experienced in the Northwest. Not that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, but I didn't know how to handle it. Because the crowd that I was around up there in the Northwest wasn't a big ribbing crowd. Well, I came here, and not only was it a ribbing crowd, but I was the new guy. So guess who took the ribs? I took a lot of them. And, it really made me second-guess things for a while, but all you can do is keep going. And standing here, and let me tell you, I'm the same guys that I thought didn't like me because they were ribbing me 9 months ago. It's good boys. They're good boys.
As far as actual in-the-ring professional wrestling, what would you say are some of the differences that you've noticed between here in the Northwest and in the North Georgia territory?
In-ring, probably the biggest difference that I see is the aptitude to call spots. I feel like I saw a whole lot more spot calling matches in the Northwest than I do here. A lot of guys here like to get in the ring and, you know, like to say walk and talk, call things on the go and put together a match. A lot of the training here is really centric on if you're going to call spots, it's beginning, middle, and end. The rest is kind of pieced together based on crowd reaction and based on psychology. And that's been valuable training for me because it's something that we never really at least got around to in my training when I was up there in the Northwest.
And definitely kind of uncommon to see people that like to do that up here. Now, you officiated a lot of matches up here.
Mm-hmm.
As the official, were you learning how to call a match a little bit? Was it something that gave you a little bit of a learning experience on how to put together a match, or was it something where you weren't really able to do that until you started wrestling in North Georgia and were able to, as a wrestler, get in there and see how they did things?
I can tell you that the moment of clarity that I had was involved in a tag team match. I really struggled at first officiating tag team matches, and that was because I didn't understand psychology. I didn't understand what was next. I didn't understand where the referee needed to be and what he needed to be doing. And once I understood properly how to officiate a tag team match, it was as if that cracked the egg of psychology, and I really started to understand. So it was absolutely a learning experience, it was a learning experience that I encourage everybody to put the stripes on anytime that they have the opportunity to do so, because if you can't learn from that experience, then that's your fault.
Now, in our area, referees are sort of at a premium. There's a lot of newer referees that have less than 3 years' experience in the wrestling business, especially up in the Bremerton, Paulsboro, Gig Harbor area where you were based out of. A lot of the referees are still new. What do you think are the differences, if you notice any, between the referees that were here and plying their trade when you were active here, as opposed to what you've come across on shows in your new home base of North Georgia?
Now, let me tell you what. There are good referees and there are bad referees, and you never know where you're going to run into them. I've seen both good and bad referees right there in West Washington, the same thing here in South Carolina and Georgia, anywhere else that I've been. It's hard to say. It's hard for me to answer that question because there are good and bad. Some of the biggest differences, to be honest with you, in the South, maybe there's a little bit more of a buddy system. So there's a possibility that you might run into so-and-so's uncle or the promoter's cousin who decides they want to be a referee and they have absolutely no training whatsoever. I've run into that. And then on the other side of that, you know, there are highly qualified referees that you can find on the shows right here in Georgia. The same goes both ways in the Northwest. So really my message for that, I guess if I had to give you a go-home for it was, or it would be that, you know, you can't take referees or their training for granted, because when you're in the ring and, say, the spot starts to fall apart, things aren't going as well as you would like. Maybe you get hit upside the head a little bit too hard, you lose where you are. Sometimes that referee is the difference between you being able to turn out a polished, finished match or it just falling apart. So it's important to have experienced, knowledgeable referees.
Definitely helps. Now, in my experience, I've noticed going to different parts of the country that a lot of times the fans of independent shows will often kind of parallel what the fans in a given territory enjoyed style-wise and how wrestling is presented. Like, for example, fans in the Midwest prefer more of the AWA type of wrestling, mm-hmm. as opposed to, say, a crowd in Memphis that are going to want more brawling and comedy, that type of thing in their wrestling. Have you noticed that, having gone to different parts of the country, that holds true, or is it just me?
I have absolutely noticed the same thing. One that comes to mind is this past summer, I had the opportunity to join up with a group of guys, and we went up to Logan, West Virginia, and we spent the better part of a week there doing a recurring nightly show for the West Virginia Freedom Festival. And it was a great time up there with a great group of guys. But the one thing that I really took home from that was the crowd and the way that they interacted with us and the story that we were telling. The first night we were there, we quite simply tried to do too much. And I guess we kind of overcooked the goose because they didn't have a full understanding of what was going on. We were moving too fast. Night two, we went out there and we slowed down and we gave them an old school Appalachian Southern wrestling contest, and they loved it. They absolutely loved it. So exactly what you're talking about, different styles from different territories and regions. If you want to brawl, you better go to Memphis. And that's starting to creep into Georgia right now as well. So, you know, one of our big draws right now is realism and violence. So that's creeping into the Georgia scene that I'm working right now. You're exactly right. It's all in where you go as to what the crowd has an appetite for.
Now, anyone that's in the ring for any given length of time is going to experience the occasional injury. It's just the nature of the business. So far in your brief career, have you had to deal with very many injuries at all?
Oh, goodness gracious. My brief career could be summarized by bullet points of injuries. had a separated shoulder that set me back for quite a while. I tore an ACL that set me back for a while. And that's just two big ones that, you know, I missed some significant time over. Have I been hurt beyond that? Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think you were there in the back of La Pablo Nita's in Bremerton the night that I split my forehead open before the show even started. I believe you were there that day. So I've certainly had plenty of accidents and injuries along the way. And the first few times it happened, it really psychologically took a toll on me. I got hurt and I was like, well, this isn't for me. I'm not tough enough, whatever the deal may be. And I was beating myself up. And at this point, I'm so used to the injury bug striking at inopportune moments that I just laugh it off and work harder.
I was there that day, and I was a nasty injury. Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know he has some questions as well, so I'm going to turn things to him.
All right, come on in, QT.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Dylan.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. You know, I think I may have seen your match in Bremerton at La Prablonita's. I think I did, yes. Sometimes Sangai and myself carpool to Bremerton. Yes, sometimes.
Right.
And
cool
sometimes,
deal.
Sometimes Sangai takes the ferry because he has special access to the bridge where he can toot the foghorn. Yes.
Really? He never told
yes.
me that. Now I have to come back just to see it.
Oh, all right. Well, Dylan, I saw your YouTube video entitled Bryson Willis versus Rock and Roll Outlaw Dylan Gage, and it
yep.
was your debut match at Golden Corner Wrestling. That took place in September 2017.
Sure did.
My first question is, have you gone back and watched the video? And if so, how would you rate the commentators for the match, Mike Warsham, Cade Crenshaw, and Heath Mulligan?
Well, let me tell you about those three commentators and how I would rate them. Mike Warsham, great man, terrible commentator. Crenshaw, he's a good commentator with a bright future ahead of him. And Heath Mulligan, let me tell you about him. Now, I had the misfortune of calling a show with him last night on commentary, and he's just a chore. He's a chore to be around, and he's a chore to carry through a commentary gig.
Oh, a chore. Well, do you think he was drinking a little bit of the bourbon before the match?
You know, at a Golden Corner show, I would hope not. That's it's a very religious organization. So if he was drinking before the Jesus wrestling, then he needs to have a conversation with someone other than you and I.
Oh my gosh! All right, okay. So you're saying that these three announcers may have their work cut out for them if they hope to achieve the standards of, say, a Gordon Solie.
Yeah, they would have a little bit of work to do. I think that's an accurate statement.
Oh, all right. Okay. Now, how did you come to hear about Golden Corner Wrestling? Did you send them a SCW video from the Northwest?
I did not. I didn't send them a video. I was talking to Sign Guy after we made the transition and the move from the Northwest to the Southeast. I didn't really have any contacts here. I kind of was scared that I had left most of my wrestling stuff behind up there, and so started digging around, and I found out about this show that was running near me, and I met those guys and hooked up with Golden Corner through good old-fashioned cold calling and just hard work. I had to build that network.
Oh, all right. Okay. You put in a lot of the legwork. Okay. Very good. Okay. Well, Dylan, at the start of the match, after Bryson had his say and he dropped the microphone, he charged you and you ducked a wild right hand of his. And then in the space of just slightly under 2 seconds, you hit him with three straight left jabs that snapped his head back. Did you do any boxing as a teenager?
I did do some boxing as a teenager, and I was quite good at the time, and as a matter of fact, if you catch me right now, more times than not, when I'm in the gym, you're going to find me with a trainer and with some gloves on. I train boxing all the time to this very day.
Oh, wow. Okay. Would you say that you're a historian of boxing?
I would not say that I'm a historian of boxing. I would just like to train to be prepared to punch people in the face.
Oh, okay. Well, that is a good skill to have. I was wondering if you had ever heard of a lightweight boxing champ of the 1930s, Barney Ross.
I have heard the name.
Oh, okay. Yes, he was in the lightweight division, and I believe he later went on to serve in World War II and was wounded at Guadalcanal.
That's fantastic and history in itself. So Guadalcanal, am I assuming that correctly that he served with the Marines at Guadalcanal?
I'm not sure if it was the Army or Marines, but if I'm not mistaken, he was wounded, and the Army knew about him and his boxing championship, but he said that he didn't need any special treatment, and he went in as a grunt, became wounded, and sadly became hooked on morphine because of his wound. Yes.
What a sad tale that is. But aren't there some parallels to be found there between the world that we all live in now and that sad story?
Yes, as far as the veterans go, yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that, of course, has a soft spot in my heart because I'm a veteran. And so thank you for sharing that with me.
Yes, if you get a chance, look up Barney Ross. Maybe do a Wikipedia search, and I've researched a lot of boxers, but I do believe he was wounded at Guadalcanal or Okinawa. Yes.
Okay.
Barney Ross. And you might be able to catch him on YouTube. A very good fighter. Okay.
Perfect.
Now, about Bryson. Have you wrestled him since this debut match?
I have not wrestled Bryson Willis since that debut match. And to be honest with you, I'm not saying I'm running from the guy, but I'm not excited to see him the next time I draw that name either, because you talk about a big physical guy. Oh, man. I'm a big physical guy, and he outbigged and out-physicaled me. I mean, you've been watching the match. You saw what happened. The last thing that I want to do is get in the ring with Bryson again before I'm ready.
Yes, but from video analysis, I'm going to say that he went 6'2.5" and probably 245 pounds, 250.
Mm-hmm. Every single bit of it.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, Dylan, you had good-looking green and black wrestling gear on for the match. Do you make your gear yourself?
I do not make the gear myself. I do all of my own graphic design. I do all of my own branding. So the logos and the designs that you see on my gear, those all come out of my brain. I don't outsource that to anybody else. It just comes straight from me. But I do outsource the work itself. So I send the work out, and I have my tights actually dyed so that it's not a multi-layered sew-on like most wrestling gear is. So it's actually a sublimated dye onto the leggings that you don't have to worry about ever peeling or fading.
Oh, wow. Very nice. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, Dylan, do you produce your own line of T-shirts? And if so, what has been your best-selling day for T-shirts?
Oh, man. Well, it's a stretch to say that I produce my own line of T-shirts, but I do have T-shirts. My best-selling day, if I had to turn it back, and I don't have the numbers on this, but October the 7th of last year, I did a show in Florence, South Carolina for Carolina Wrestling Entertainment, and there weren't a whole lot of people there. But for some reason, I went over with those guys big in that town, and I sold my entire merchandise box. So I literally had to come back and order everything again.
Oh, well, it's good when you have a good selling day. That's good.
Yeah, it is. It's always a good thing That's what we're all here at the end of the day for, is to make money, right?
Well, yes, it does help.
Yes.
Wow, all right, fantastic. Okay, can you give us a ballpark figure of the dollar amount that you made that day?
Oh, goodness. You know, nothing astonishing, probably $100, $120 at the most. But that's a good T-shirt day for a guy like me. So.
Oh, that ain't bad. That ain't bad. Bearing in mind that at one concert in Japan, Kiss sold like $1 million worth of T-shirts in one concert.
Right. And you know, the Rock and Roll Outlaw, I'm still working on attaining that Kiss level. I'm going to get there. It's just going to take some more hard work.
Oh, okay. Well, out of the four Kiss characters, would you most identify yourself as Peter Criss, the drummer, the Catman?
Oh, absolutely. I could totally identify with that. As a matter of fact,
oh.
I think I might look nice in the paint getup and everything.
Oh, okay. All right.
Maybe I should break that out for a big show. Do some Kiss ring wear.
Oh, so you're saying you'd be better suited as a Catman than say the spaceman or the demon?
Well, very well could be. Very well could be. I mean, cats are silly. If nothing else, I like cat videos.
Oh, okay. All right. Like cats playing piano. Yes. Very, very good. Well, all right. Okay, well, Dylan, did you ever come across a Northwest wrestler named Darth Carter, whom everyone agrees has the same charisma as a junkyard dog?
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe Darth Carter will send you some video of him. He's kind of elusive. Yes, kind of elusive. All right. Well, Darth Carter, if you are listening, you might want to send Dylan a match of yours, if indeed you have been videographed or a videotape. Okay. All right. Well, Dylan, have you ever wrestled in Charleston, South Carolina, where I was stationed on a Coast Guard cutter?
I have not had the opportunity yet to wrestle in Charleston, South Carolina. That's one of the places that is on my list that hopefully I'm going to get to knock off in 2018. I've started talking to some folks in the area, and I have a lot of friends, and I have some old college buddies that all live down in Charleston. So they're on me to come and wrestle for them. I want to come down and wrestle for them, and I have confidence that 2018 is going to see me down in the holy city of Charleston.
Before or after the match, do you have plans to visit the USS Hunley, the Confederate submarine that they have salvaged and is on display?
If I go down for a wrestling match, I likely will not take the time to go see the Hunley, but I have seen it before. So that's the only reason that I wouldn't make a point to do that, is because, you know, I've been there, done that. I've heard the song, and I know how it ends.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, Dylan, do you have any plans to wrestle in Mexico? And have you ever had a lucha wrestling tag partner?
I have not had a lucha wrestling tag partner, though that came pretty close one time to happening with a promotion up there in the Northwest for just a one-off experience one time. It didn't come to fruition. Probably better that it didn't. It was just an idea that some folks were talking around. So, no, I haven't had a lucha tag partner yet. And do I have plans of going and wrestling in Mexico? I can't say right now that I have plans. I don't have an itinerary, but absolutely it's something that I want to do.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, Dylan, I have come across a book, or one was loaned to me, called 365 Things Every Tea Lover Should Know. And on page 56, it says, here, let me pick up the book. Page 56, let me see what's it. Here we go. I was on the wrong page. Okay, 56. Children of all ages will love jam tea. Place a teaspoon of a favorite jam in the bottom of a teacup. Pour prepared hot English breakfast tea over the jam and stir. If more sweetness is desired, add a bit of sugar and top with whipped cream. My question is, before today, did you ever hear of jam tea? And what is the first jam that you yourself are going to try?
This is the first. It's the first I've heard of jam tea. If I were going to try one, if I were going to pick a jam, the first thing that comes to mind is going to take me back to my Marine Corps days. I was stationed in 29 Palms, California, middle of the Mojave Desert. It's not a great place to be. But one of the local delicacies there is a cactus jam.
Oh, cactus
jam. I would probably start with a cactus jam.
Wow, duly noted. Now, this is probably going to be a question and a passage from that book that I'm going to ask a lot of wrestlers from now on. You are our first submission, and I'm going to note that you're the first submission, and it was cactus tea. Oh, okay.
Absolutely. I love it. The maiden voice.
Yes. Okay. Well, Dylan, do you know what a jam sandwich is?
Some jam on some bread. I mean, it seems like it's self-explanatory, but maybe that's not right.
No, you take two pieces of bread and jam them together.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Actually, I got that off of a Tom Hanks comedy movie. I kind of plagiarized it. Okay.
Well, at least you gave credit.
Okay. All right. Well, Dylan, thank you for your service. And to clarify, I now take it you were in the Marines since you were stationed at 29 Palms, right?
That's correct. I was in the United States Marine Corps.
Okay. Where did you do your basic?
I'm a product of Parris Island, South Carolina.
Oh, a brutal place, a solemn place too. Yes.
That is.
Okay.
It certainly is.
Is your favorite war movie Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, or perhaps 1979's Apocalypse Now?
Well, I like all of those films, but if I had to pick one from my current state, I would pick probably the first half of Full Metal Jacket. As a Marine, and now an aging Marine, I hate to admit it, I love the nostalgia of watching the first half of that movie. It really takes you back to those boot camp and basic training days. And Stanley Kubrick really nailed it when he filmed those scenes. So I absolutely love it.
I take it you had a Joker in your company?
I think every company probably has a Joker somewhere.
Oh, okay. Wow. Oh, boy. All right. Well, Dylan, you mentioned Ian Baer and Paul Serbius as early Northwest mentors. Did you also get a chance to work with Aaron Bolo?
No, I don't believe I've had the opportunity to do much with Aaron.
Oh, okay. All right. Did you turn out for wrestling in high school?
I did attempt wrestling in high school and didn't really care for it that much. It wasn't something that I enjoyed, and so I found other ways to spend my time. So I don't really have that strong of a background as a mat wrestler.
Oh, okay. Well, did you turn out for maybe one or two years of wrestling?
What was that? I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Did you turn out for maybe 1 or 2 years of wrestling in high school?
Oh, it was definitely one. It was a one and done. I'm not even certain I finished the one.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm going to say you probably wrestled at 140 pounds, 140.
I'm certain that you would be way off. I was well into my 180s when I was in high school.
Oh, okay. All right. Wow. On that one. Okay. Well, Dylan, what's the hardest knife edge chop you have ever received from a wrestler from the Northwest, and was it Kevin Sullivan?
It was not Kevin Sullivan. It was not Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan, I'm sorry. It probably, and I hate to admit this, probably came from Otis the Gimp.
Otis the Gimp. Okay.
Yes, it probably came from Otis the Gimp. We were in a battle royal for SCW one night, and as a matter of fact, this may, I would have to look back in my book to tell you, it may have been my actual debut in this battle royal, and Otis put me in a corner, and I think he tried to chop me stupid.
Oh, wow. That's kind of frightening to receive a knife-edge chop for someone in, like, what do you call that, an executioner's mask?
I just call it an Otis outfit. Is it not terrifying?
Oh, all right. Man, okay. Well, Dylan, did you take part in any of the free libraries that dot the Seattle landscape when you were out here, where you take a book and leave a book? Free libraries.
I did, as a matter of fact. Now, I've never referred to it or had a discussion about these things as free libraries, but I did see these things pop up all along the sides of the roads near communities, and I would take a book and leave it and exchange it for one I haven't read. So, yes, I've participated.
Oh, okay. Any books that you took that come to mind?
Probably that came to mind right off the top. I'm a huge Michael Connelly fan. If I'm going to be reading fiction, I like it to be Michael Connelly, and once I picked up a copy of The Concrete Blonde.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay. Very good. Okay. All right. Well, Dylan, we play a game here on Turnbuckle Turmoil called Bring on the Choice, Bring on the Funk, and you're given the choice between two subject matters. Picture yourself like on a couch in a psychiatrist's office, and he gives you a choice of two subject matters, or he holds up a picture, and you say the first thing that pops into your mind, or you say the first choice between two subject matters. Are you ready to play this game?
All right, let's give it a shot.
Okay. Olympic-sized swimming pool or jacuzzi?
Michael Phelps.
Oh, okay. All right,
that's
good.
The first thing that came to mind. I'll take the swimming pool, and the first thing I think of is Michael Phelps, because no one can swim better, I don't think.
Oh, I hear that, yes. You've got that right. Boy, yeah. Talk about a guy that consumes 5,000 calories a day. Yes.
Well,
okay.
Let's be honest. I've done that a time or two, but I've learned to stay away from the buffet.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Wow. Okay. Snickers candy bar or Three Musketeers?
I will take the Snickers 100% of the time.
Oh, wow. Okay. With a caramely nougat. Yes. Okay.
Absolutely. There's a whole song, the crunchy peanut soar over chocolate-covered mountaintops, waterfalls of caramel, dancing nougat in the meadow, sings a song of satisfaction to the world.
Hey, well, you are cut out to be a candy bar salesman. Yes. Wow. Very good. Very good. All right. Well, I'm just saying that those candy bars are better than K-rations. Yes.
Absolutely. They're better than anything they fed me on active duty.
Yes. Oh, okay. All right. Protesters' bullhorn or school intercom?
Oh, man. Give me the bullhorn. Give me the bullhorn. I like to be heard.
Okay. All right. How about Captain Picard or Mr. Spock?
Oh, Spock.
Spock. Okay. How about s'mores or Reuben sandwich?
Ooh, tough choice, but I'm going to go with s'mores because s'mores are an experience.
Oh, boy. Yeah, for me, they're a bad experience. Yes, bad experience. Okay.
I'm afraid to ask.
Well, I just don't like those pretentious people in their Docker pants dancing around campfires and sharing s'mores. I just don't feel pretending.
I do. I prefer to sit by my campfires, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, well, I'm glad someone does. Okay. There we go. All right. Arby's or Jack in the Box?
Oh, Arby's. I'm a huge Arby's enthusiast. I celebrate the entire catalog.
Oh, wow. So you're a big fan of the curly fries? Curly fries.
The curly fries, I love the curly fries far too much. They're dangerous for me. It's a high-carb item, and I have to stay away from them. But Arby's is my go-to.
Wow. Well, okay. I'm noting that in our Turnbuckle Turmoil logbook. Yes. If you ever come out here, I'll treat you to a beef and cheddar. Well, the next time you're out here, and cheddar.
Absolutely. I'm going to write that down in my book and hold you to it.
Oh, all right. Okay. All right. Jake the Snake Roberts or Kofi Kingston?
Oh, goodness gracious. You know what? Give me Jake the Snake. Old school wrestling, old school heat. I like it.
All right. Okay. Leapin' Lanny Poffo or Jumpin' Jim Bronzell?
Leapin' Lanny.
Okay. All right. Seinfeld or The Big Bang?
I'll take The Big Bang, and I'm not a huge Big Bang fan, but I'll tell you what. I'm one of those people. You know the people I'm talking about. I don't get Seinfeld. It doesn't do anything for me.
Oh, okay. All right, duly noted. Okay, no problem. Well, then this is probably self-explanatory. Newman or Sheldon?
Sheldon, absolutely.
Of course. Okay, Sheldon, all right. Peppermint schnapps or Bombay gin?
Give me the schnapps, peppermint schnapps. As a matter of the fact, I think way, way back, a long time ago, peppermint schnapps may have been the first taste of alcohol I ever had.
Oh, wow. That's quite the introduction. Okay, quite the introduction.
Sure is. Welcome to the real world.
Now, did you know Sid Vicious of the Sex Pistols used to mix peppermint schnapps and Rainer Ale?
Oh, I can hardly imagine. That sounds like quite the interesting combination.
Yes. Boy, then. Okay. Singles or tag team competition?
Oh, singles or tag team. Right now I'm going to go tag team. We have a good gimmick going right now with a tag team. My best friend and I, Jackson Carter. And now we've made another best friend, Kyle Phillips, and we're doing some good stuff. So tag team action.
Well, I can only hope if you come back here in the Northwest that you get a chance to team with Otis again. That'd be great.
Well, the sheriff's department, because there's still a restraining order.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. Okay. Chris Masters or Tony Atlas?
Tony Atlas.
Oh, all right. Okay. Russian leg sweep or senton?
I'm a Russian leg sweep guy.
Okay, all right. Sly in the Family.
T-shirt. Okay.
Oh, all what's right. that? That you're a Russian leg sweep guy?
I'm a Russian leg sweep guy. That's going on our T-shirt.
Oh, good. Okay. Absolutely. All right. Well, you'll have to keep us updated on those sales. Yes.
Sure will.
Oh, okay. All right. Sly and the Family Stone or Guns N' Roses?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. You're going to make me choose between the two. Listen, the rock and roll outlaw says Guns N' Roses, but Sly and the Family Stone, I don't know. That's tough. All right, Guns N' Roses it is.
Wow. All right. Okay. Guns N' Roses. Okay. And the last one, and you may not, this is a little bit dated, Dastardly Muttley or Huckleberry Hound?
Huckleberry Hound.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now you do know who I'm referring to when I mentioned Dastardly Muttley, don't you?
I was not entirely sure, but I recognized the other, so I chose it. Why don't you enlighten me?
Oh, okay. Well, it wasn't really Dastardly Muttley. It was just Muttley, and he was a guffine dog on Stop That Pigeon, an animated cartoon of the 60s.
Fantastic.
Yes,
I didn't realize I was going to learn so much on a podcast today.
Well, now it's reciprocal. We learned that you had started out with peppermint schnapps. So, okay.
Absolutely did.
All right. At this moment, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy.
All right, come on in, sign guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Dylan, you talked about being a big fan of the Russian leg sweep. What would you say right now might be the most underrated maneuver that not a lot of people are using currently on the independent scene that should make a comeback?
Oh, you know what? One of my favorites that I don't see a lot is a good old-fashioned drop toe hold. I've always been a big fan of the drop toe hold. It's a great way to neutralize a larger opponent and get them down to the mat. But I don't see guys using it. I see them working legs for 5 minutes and trying to chop the tree on a big guy. But sometimes a drop toe hold will just get the job done.
Very simple but effective.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One of the points of pride that most wrestlers take a lot of diligence in is their wrestling gear. Where do you go for all of your wrestling gear needs?
I order mine actually directly through a subcontract. So we have them sublimate and dye the fabric, and then we create and sew the leggings ourselves. So I'm doing design and putting together the final product, but we just have a company in China that's doing the dye.
Very nice. Now, even though you're still relatively new to the business, if someone were to come to you today and they asked you how they could get involved in the professional wrestling industry, what would your best advice be to that person?
The best advice that I could probably give to that person would be to take your time entering in and make sure that it's really what you want to do. I see so many guys that think they want to be in the wrestling business, and they come and they start and they go absolute full speed, head on full speed for 2 months, and they burn out and they don't come back. So that's the advice that I would give to someone that's never been there before right off the bat, is to look at the people around you, look at what you're doing, feel how it feels, and decide, is this really what you want to do to spend your time? I'm a guy that believes that wrestling business requires sacrifice and it requires competition, and I'm always working to get to the next level. So it drives me crazy on a different level when I see guys that I like to say are waiting in the business. They want to be there, but they don't want to work for it. And so that's why I tell people that it's time to decide whether or not you actually want to be here, because it's a commitment.
Now, do you get a lot of fans that approach you at shows and inquire how they could go about getting into the business, or they might ask you questions about where there is training, anything like that, trying to use you as the first step on potentially getting there?
You know, I have had people reach out to me before, and I've had people that I've referred in and said, you know, bring them in, let's take a look and give them a tryout. I don't have anyone that I've brought in that, you know, is my quote-unquote prodigy or someone I've taken under my wing. I don't think I'm really ready to take anyone under my wing, I'm sorry. So it's yes and no are the answers. I have had it happen, and I've accommodated a couple of choice people, but it's not something that happens to me regularly.
Well, we're coming down to the final few minutes of the show, and I want to give you ample time. So if there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you got, social medias, upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite ice cream store, anything in the world, go ahead and do that right now.
No, I just want to take the opportunity, and I'll give out some social media plugs. If we're not friends on Facebook, you can find me on there. Just put Dylan Gage Wrestler into the search bar. It'll bring you right up. Make sure that your friends send me a message, interact with me. I love talking to folks. And I want to say thank you. I owe thank yous to a lot of people in the Pacific Northwest that I didn't necessarily get the opportunity to say thank you or goodbye to when we left, but they all know that I'm continuing this path and that I'm continuing this dream. And there's so many people up there that I love and I care about, and I can't wait to get back up there and see everyone.
All right. Well, Dylan, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us here today. I look forward to your return to the Pacific Northwest. Hopefully that'll be coming up in the next few months. And best of luck as you continue to progress in your wrestling career.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, you guys, for having me. I've had a great time. Most interesting podcast I've ever done.
Oh, good.
All right. All right. Well, fans, if you've not seen Dylan in action, look him up. I mean, he's got some stuff out there on YouTube. If you're in the North Georgia area, go buy a ticket, support what he does as he continues to get better and progress. And we will be back with you next week. Next Friday afternoon, we'll be back with author and historian Scott Teal. And a week from today, we have Cascade Championship Wrestling promoter Tommy Swanson returning to the show. Should be an interesting time next week. We will talk to you then. The only thing I know-